Hello, Martin here. And just before we begin this quality program, I just wanted to give a quick little explanation to something that you're about to hear. Sam sadly couldn't join us for this episode, so he sent us some audio feedback. And for some reason, he confuses the character of Vinda in Doctor Who for the real-life man, John Barrowman. I don't know why. And also, he confuses the character of Claire for the character of Diane. Again, I don't know why. Maybe he was ill. Maybe he's just recovering from a traumatic experience at the zoo. I don't know. I thought about telling him, but then I thought, you know what? I've already put away all the recording equipment. I've already edited the main show. I'm too lazy. What do you want from me, listeners? I'm too lazy. I mean, sure, I had to dig out all of the equipment again to record this little preamble. That's it. I don't need emails. That's it. Let's just get on with the show.
I didn't get the vodka in the end. I was quite tired, so I was like, no, I need to stay awake for this.
Yeah, that's the thing. I started drinking about 3 o'clock.
Oh, fair enough.
And on that note, welcome to the latest episode of the Bad Wolf podcast. I think this is episode 274. I'm a little bit inebriated. Chris is tired from being a parent. We don't really know where this show's going to go tonight. I think it's just going to be one of those ones. I guess, Chris, we should talk about the sad news that we have to begin the show. Long-term listeners might remember that about 18 months, 2 years ago, Sam got a criminal conviction for trying to smuggle penguins out of London Zoo.
Yes.
And it basically got quashed and he agreed never to return to London Zoo. But he went back to London Zoo today. And yeah, he's doing hard time. So who knows what's going to happen. His wife is trying to smuggle him a little audio device so that he can record his feedback for this episode. But who knows, if we get it in time, I'll put it in. But if not...
The fact that they let him watch the episode at all just feels a bit of an insult to the penguins. I think that's a bit too lenient for what he deserves, to be honest.
It was weird because apparently he was shouting out, "Frobisher, follow me," and he was wearing a sick doctor coat. And it's just, I don't even know if Sam's listened to those Big Finish, so it's just really weird. But yeah, honestly, when Sam gets bailed or whatever, he'll be back with us.
So Doctor Who, Flux, Chapter 3. Well, most importantly, I think, is that I'm thoroughly, thoroughly entertained by this season. I rush home to make sure I watch it live. I'm not how I've been the last few series where I've thought, oh, I'll catch up the next couple of days or so. Bad Wolf, we're going to do a review of it, so I better watch it. I genuinely want to watch it live. I want to be able to text you guys afterwards and talk about it, and it's exciting. A very, very mysterious episode. Lots going on, and I think it would have been very easy for people to have got lost. I've seen a few people complain that they were just confused, but I think maybe that was down to the fact they just kind of didn't get that sort of thing. As for me, I love it when Doctor Who goes a little bit crazy. The first episode I ever watched was The Mind Robber. So I love random Doctor Who. What a weird introduction to the show that was for a three-year-old me. But I do know there's a lot of the fandom who just like basic sci-fi, you know, a nice, simple Base Under Siege story. And it certainly wasn't that. This was more of a, as I said, Mind Robber. It was more of a Kinder snake dance sort of thing where there's lots of crazy stuff going on. And that's what I really enjoy, you know. And I feel this series has really resembled one of my favourite Hartnell stories, The Keys of Marinus, with, you know, them kind of going to each place and having different adventures. So for me, I really enjoy it. For this particular instalment, as I said, it was a little bit all over the place. But it was well done in pace so that you didn't get too confused, I think. It became apparent that what she was living was something that had previously happened in her life that she doesn't remember, at least not for now. It was good to see the Joe Martin doctor back. It was good to be a little bit more revealed into her position in the doctor's canon. As I said, I'm not a big fan of the Joe Martin doctor, but in the same way I'm not a fan of the War Doctor. I'm a traditionalist like that, but at least it shows that Chibnall's got some sort of long-term plan here, and hopefully it will be revealed by Chapter 6. It was fun seeing the companions play slightly different roles, you know, as they were kind of her, the Doctor's army, which was nicely done. I like that we saw a little bit more of all their lives as well. We had the Doctor going into their time stream and going into flashbacks of their life. Just really small things. It wasn't like, oh, this is a moment in Yaz's life where it defined her police career. It was just her sat in the car talking to a colleague. Little things like that really helped to build the character. Same with John Barrowman as well, and seeing a little bit more of his relationship with Claire. So that was all really, really well done. And I'm always a big fan of sort of cutting through time and things like that. And I think it was done really, really well. The only real downside to me is the Cybermen. I think we've all been very excited to see the Cybermen. I'm a big Cyberman fan, love them in the classic series, can't stand them in the new series. And to see them then again, just, you know, walk slowly down a hallway, I mean, that was very Revenge of the Cybermen, you know, slowly walk down a hallway while being shot at. If eight Cybermen can't beat one girl, then what is the point? You know, what's the point in bringing them back if you're not going to make them a threat? Hopefully that's not the last we've seen of them. Hopefully they'll come back properly. But I'm a little bit worried that the only footage we've had of them so far was from this episode. So if that's all we get the Cybermen, then that's going to be a big, big thumbs down for me for this series as an overall. Even though it's been entertaining overall and I'm really enjoying it, they're my favourite baddies. And to see them, you know, used again to such in such a limited way is just a real shame. But to summarise, yeah, I'm still very entertained by this series. I'm still definitely going to make sure I watch it live at 6:30 next Sunday. Don't want to be late for it. Don't want to catch up on the iPlayer. I want to be there watching it as it happens. I love that these characters have got something to them. It's amazing that we're only in the third episode of this season, and I know so much more about, you know, John Barrowman's character and Cable. And, you know, we've got his backstory. We know his lover's out there who's pregnant with his child. You know, we've known so much more about these characters and what they're going through than we ever did Ryan and Graham. So this is so much more of an improvement. It's like we were saying last week, it's season 10 all over again. They finally got the Doctor and the Companions right. And just as it's all going well, he's going to leave at the end of the season. But at least it means to Jodie, who had a fantastic performance in this episode, by the way, really, really good. It's good that she's getting this series before the end of her reign.
All right, I should clarify that is a joke. Sam's just not feeling well tonight. Because there was a joke last week that went online. You know Dominic, the Who Chaser on Twitter.
And producer now for Big Finish.
And he's a producer for Big Finish. He's doing really well. And he deserves it because he works so fucking hard on those fan-made audios and stuff. And yeah, he deserves this. But there was like a Twitter account came up and they posted a joke. And it was basically the joke was you shouldn't believe quotes that you see in the media. So they said they approached Dominic and asked if he was the 14th Doctor. And Dominic replied, "I am who?" And then when you clicked on the next quote, it was like, "Who are you? How did you get in my house? I'm calling the police." And the joke being that, you know, stuff gets manipulated in the media gets truncated. The amount of people who thought that Dominic's house was actually broken into by these people was fucking staggering. Like nearly every reply was like, "Dominic, this is terrible. Have you gone to the police? Like, how did this happen?" So yeah, I've learned over these, you can't really joke with certain Doctor Who. They're very literal. So I just want to say Sam hasn't committed any criminal offense.
That is just
something I thought would be funny at the start of the podcast.
But then you grew a conscience as you as you go on.
Well, I don't want, like, tweets going on about him, like, boycott Sam Michael.
It'd just be losing all of his comedy gigs just because of Penguins.
That would actually be funnier to me. But, Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, not too bad. Just sort of plodding as a parent, as we joked at the beginning there. My boy's starting to stand up on his own and then screams that he can't sit down again, to which it's quite funny until he keeps screaming. But aside from that, no, it's all right. Liz let me watch Doctor Who. She always gets funny. She thinks that, "Oh, you make it sound like I'm such a bad person." I said, "No, I'm only Jerry. Everything I've ever said to is a joke." But yeah, she does. She now asks me every week. She says, "Are you watching Doctor Who tonight?" She's not a fan at all. She's just, it's just not for her. It hasn't been for a while. And I said, "If
yes, please, unless you want me to watch it on my own or sometime when no one else is there and I don't mind. And she said, no, you can watch it. I said, yay, thank you. And this is the only year I've been able to do that. Three episodes in, I've actually felt like, yay, I'm watching Doctor Who tonight, which is very, very strange. I haven't felt like this in a while. You know, like if you see a Venn diagram of what makes a not my Doctor fan sort of thing, I had a few points that looked like I was heading that way. And I'm glad to say it's not.
I haven't been able to watch any of these live, and it's just because, you know, I don't live with my ex or my kids anymore, so they come to me at the weekends.
Mm.
Yeah, she said she's going to pick them up after six. She'll turn up like 20, 30 minutes, bang into the episode. And then I've got to walk the kids down to the car because it's dark. I've got to talk to her about how they've been, pack their stuff in the car.
Yeah,
like yesterday, my daughter left her iPad, so I had to then walk all the way down the stairs again to go and take it back to the car. I think some guy thought I was doing some kind of dodgy drug deal because my street's a one-way street, so my ex then had to go all the way around to come back again to come to ours.
Oh,
so I'm
my
like
God.
Waiting outside on the pavement in my pajamas and slippers with this iPad as this guy pulls up trying to get in and he's just looking at me. But yeah, long story short, I haven't been able to watch any of these episodes on broadcast. So I've watched them about an hour later. So I'm avoiding Twitter vehemently as I do.
I only watched this one live just because actually Liz reminded me and she said, it's on. It's probably on now. I was like, oh, right, okay, yep, put it on. And it just came on. It was like the previously bit. So I was like, oh, thanks for that. The other times I lose track of time. So I'll be on the iPlayer straight away and it will say watch from the beginning or watch from the start and I'll just catch up that way.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm doing. So Chris, we're on episode 3 of Doctor Who Flux.
Mm.
And this episode is called Once Upon Time.
Mm.
Jared, I'm forgetting who I'm talking to. Chris, I'm so fucked. I shouldn't be drinking, bloody hell. All right, Chris, what do you think the plot was?
To be honest, I did actually understand the plot. It was more an interesting way of them taking steps back to get some context of what's been going on. A bit more of a step into history. It is thrown it felt like a Stephen Moffat episode, but one with actual purpose in a sense. It wasn't just timey-wimey bizarre for the sake of it. It did have explanations as to why it did it. And well, when it started off, the opening bit with, is it Bell? I can't remember
Bell,
her name.
Yeah.
That sort of story, I was like, okay, right. Not quite sure where this is going and found it quite cringy in some areas. I didn't even know who she was traveling after. I thought for the whole thing, she was just in love with her Tamagotchi she held in her hands.
We've all been there. I mean, we are kids of the 90s. We've been there.
Yeah, she's holding it, just talking aloud as if it was. I thought it was that, but nope, it turned out to be, spoiler alert, Vinda. But that's the only sort of weak part of the episode for me. The rest of it, such as the Doctor's part particularly, it looked like time was all out of joint, but it wasn't exactly. It was just a flashback, but portrayed through, you know, their characters as they played other characters and with interesting little glitches. And obviously we had the return of Joe Martin as the pre-Hartnell Doctor. And it was the whole, it sort of gave perspective and showed, okay, right, this is how far back the Swarm and the Doctor have had their dance, and this is how he got captured in the first place. So to me, that gave away that answer. We also had Vinda's story, which I thought was actually quite sad, really, and it gave some perspective as to why he's out there in the first place and gave a little backstory as to what sort of character he is. Dan and Yaz had to have something in their past. You had to try and keep up with it, but to me, it answered some questions we had. I can't really rate it. Someone asked, like, how would they rate it? Someone put, like, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, or whatever. I said, at the moment, it's 7.5 for me compared to, like, the 8.5 I've been giving for the others, purely because I don't know how the rest of it all fits in yet. I think it's a bit unfair to write it off and say, well, that was just fucking confusing without it fitting in the end. Because I reckon, although it did sort of, whilst it answered a few things and left a lot more mystery there, by the last episode, I think, as long as that all ties it up, that episode might have been genius. We just don't know until we see the end. That's my view of it.
Yeah, I agree with you when you say it's a bit Stephen Moffat, but not the full Moff. Yeah, I didn't find it hard to follow. I did wonder how the casual viewer that's like, oh, Doctor Who's on, I'll put it on while I do the washing up or something, would have.
Well, this is one of the exceptions to this. Is like beforehand, with series 11 and 12, they were pretty much just standalone story. That, to me, it was like a cartoon, watching a cartoon series, because it didn't really matter. By the next episode, it was like all the development and everything that happened reset. So it was like watching an episode of The Simpsons in a sense, I suppose. But for this one, you do kind of need to follow the whole story to understand it. So if you've just jumped in at episode 3, yes, you are going to be completely confused. I think this is the one series where you should really start from the beginning, because it's not six individual stories, although they have got their unique tones to them and having the six stories that all are linked in one thing. But it is technically a 6-hour, as Jodie said, a 6-hour film.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with your point that we can't really judge it until we've seen it as a whole.
Could go like Line of Duty and just be shit at the end, you know?
I've still not seen Line of Duty, so yeah. But I didn't enjoy episode 1. I loved episode 2. And this episode, I was just really indifferent to it.
There were some bits that were quite weak in it, like particularly Belle's story and how it leads to Vinda. Although when it turned out it was Vinda, I was like, oh, all right, okay. But there were many points in the episode I was going, ah, right, okay, now I'm with you. Still don't know what his name's doing in the Victorian age with the tunnels.
Him with the mutton chops.
Yeah.
He's a real historical figure that we should all know. Edward Thomas, is that his name?
I thought it was Williams or something. Williamson? Oh, I don't know.
Heavens.
Read up on what you said, which was no one knows what those tunnels were there for. So that'll be there. And they're true tunnels. So there's that. That's that mystery. But it's weird with this series because there were things. Yeah, okay. The Sontaran one was good because it had its own self-contained thing. Because you had the Sontarans turned up for an episode, that was about it, and they were outwitted at the end. So you had a beginning, middle, and end for the Sontarans of this arc. This one, of course, then goes back to the main plot, which is what is Swarm after and Azure. We found out what the passenger was, and that was quite frightening. Prospect.
Absolutely, yeah.
That really creeped me out. I won't order any masks from Wish.
It's an easy cosplay, though, especially for me, because I'm really tall, so I could probably just put that mask on and be done.
Imagine a henchman that's a prison. That's just terrifying, isn't it?
You know, one thought I did have during this entire episode?
What?
Is our Big Finish are going to get about 75 ranges out of this?
Oh, God, yeah.
And that's not a diss on Big Finish. I love Big Finish. I think they're amazing. I consume a lot of their media.
Well, these are the sort of things that they should all go for. No one wants to see the scraping of the barrel of the classic series, you know. If anyone's going to do a spin-off, there are a few, though, I'm surprised that they've never done, ever. They're doing a Peladon one now, which is something I've hinted at would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because essentially, to me, House of Cards meets Game of Thrones and Brian Hales, which would be awesome. The other one, I came up with some other ones for a joke. One of them was going back to the Tomb of the Cybermen, was Captain Hopper and his flying machine. And he just has adventures in his flying machine.
To be honest, I'd listen to that.
Great, wouldn't it? Let's go. And the other one was a series called Wilson, about a janitor at a superstore who does lottery to syndicates.
Oh, Wilson. Yeah, I remember Wilson. RTD really expands that character in the novelization of Rose. And it's quite interesting. Yeah, he's like an ex-con that's using a fake name to get a job. Really interesting.
That opens up different avenues. To me, I just had, I just mocked up Photoshop things. I was like, what actor could I put in this? Robson Green. There you go. Robson Green is Wilson.
I'd listen.
I can't remember where I put the artwork, but it's if I find it, I'll tweet it. But I've got like the sign on the door that's like "Careful, electricity" or something like that. Him holding a mop.
Do you know what? This week I've actually been listening to series 2 of Jenny, the Doctor's daughter.
Oh yeah,
which is really. I find Jenny a really fascinating character because we've never seen that side of the Doctor before. We've never seen his offspring. Obviously, we met his granddaughter. But it's really interesting having this clone because it's like, is she a full Time Lord? Can she regenerate? And there's a thing where she meets Maldivar. He's trying to auction her off because she's got Time Lord DNA, etc.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's really fascinating. It's a shame that character didn't come back on the TV series. But going back to what we're here to talk about.
There's plenty of spin-off material
from
this series.
Belle went down really well on social media. People loved her.
I didn't dislike her such. It was just more the whole I'm traveling for love thing. It's weird. I could watch a rom-com happily, but there were sometimes I look at her and go, I'm very weird with that. Ultimately, you know, it did leave some good sequences. Some CGI Daleks because they didn't want to waste time for people, you know, just to use the costume, actual props to move them along. And as someone pointed out on Twitter, which I thought was genius and I didn't even cross my mind, is that they had to animate them levitating just so they didn't have to do the dirt.
That's a good point.
Yeah, which I thought was genius. That was a very weak CGI moment, I must admit. But then again, you had the Sontarans episode and the effects in that were phenomenal. This episode, it was a mess, but I don't think it was unclear.
I was never confused during it.
No, it could easily have been. Some of the criticism also comes from, although we got some answers in this way of doing a flashback, that's something I always find quite frustrating when you're watching a series and like it'll be a six-parter, but one of the episodes would be just a flashback episode. You just like, I just get back to the present. I just want to see what happens in the present, but they have to go back and show you what happened, I don't know, 100 years ago or something like that. But I thought this found a nice way of keeping it still entertaining. You know, it wasn't a point I was really bored watching it.
I was never bored. And let me just say, fantastic to see Jo Martin back.
Yeah.
She's phenomenal. I got a little bit disappointed we didn't get more with her. Like, we just saw her in the mirror and stuff.
But that sort of backed up what happens at the end, which I thought was a brilliant performance from Jodie. It was pleading, show me more. I might never get another chance. Show me more. The fact that she did that, you know, sort of backed up all of our sort of frustrations. Well, we'd love to see more of Jo Martin, but it makes sense that they didn't. It's a tease, really.
Oh, undoubtedly we're going to see her again. If not, in the rest of this series, it'll be in the specials.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't keen. I'm still not keen on Timeless Children, that angle. This series at least intrigued me.
Well, it's interesting because they talk about universes dying here. So this universe is dying and there's another one that's going to carry on. So how would you feel about the Timeless Child plot if that's in an old universe and that the new universe we follow is from Hartnell onwards?
That's quite a good way of looking at it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that might even settle people's minds. I don't know. I've just found myself more intrigued now, especially when they've introduced, like, in episode one, they've introduced Swarm, who, by the way, is one of the best villains they've had.
Oh, absolutely. He's chewing up the scenery left and right. I love it.
It's a beautiful performance. I just can't get enough of him. But it opens up that sort of possibility, I think, as we discussed in the first episode of these reviews, which was it could only have been possible through the Timeless Children angle that they went for. Now I'm very much intrigued. When they showed Jo Martin doing her, what was to be the last mission before she was released, that was quite something. And also the whole link with Carvanista, that was a good little thing as well. This episode found an interesting way of answering questions that we had in episode one and two. Still some leave left open because we haven't got all the answers, but it will lead up to this climax, which I'm sure it will all make sense by the end. It was an entertaining, different sort of episode, but I don't think in any way it was a bad one.
Oh, no, it wasn't bad. I love getting to know Vinda a little bit more, and I love that the Doctor just keeps referring to him as the lad I don't know.
Yeah.
Jacob Anderson is a great addition. I absolutely loved the stuff between Dan and Diane.
Yes.
That felt really real. You know, when you're in the start of a relationship and you're just kind of getting to know each other, and it's not quite serious yet, but you want it to be. And I felt they captured that moment in between just really well. Like, they're a believable would-be couple.
Yeah.
John Bishop has been a revelation in this. I think he's the best addition the series has had in such a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I knew there was had to be something that obviously must have happened to him, but he looks like he's come to terms with it. I wonder if there's more to it than that, than just that he was jilted. But then again, that would scar anyone.
Absolutely, yeah.
But his optimism is just, it's not a ridiculous optimism, is it? It's not like, I don't know, Leslie Knope from Parks and Recreation level. You know, it's an annoying sense of Ned Flanders optimism. It's just, you know, he's sort of a, well, you know, that's the way it is, isn't it? And but he's like, well, so what are you going to do? He sets the right tone. He just sets the right message for people as well. And it's just amusing to watch as well. He's got it all. We all loved Graham, but mainly it was because he was just Bradley Walsh in a wig.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just Bradley Walsh.
There was nothing else to Graham apart from
Oh, Bradley Walsh.
That was it. And
my name's Graham.
And that's it. That was all his character was. And he was only funny because it was just Bradley Walsh. That was it. But John Bishop, you feel like you want to be his mate.
Yeah, he does feel like that guy down the pub that everyone loves.
But not in an annoying way. It's not like someone, it's not like if when everyone says, oh, everyone loves Dan. And then you get to someone who goes, I can't stand him.
Fuck Dan. Yeah.
You know, there's always someone like that, isn't there? They goes, he's such a nice guy. He goes, oh, can't stand the guy. Oh, hi, you're right. And then just like, prick. And there's none of that with Dan. I just think he's, as you say, he's a really brilliant addition. Just his performance is really great. I'm just looking forward to see what happens next with him. Yaz definitely come out of her skin more.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying her this series.
I know they obviously threw in the line that former police officer, Yasmin Khan, but she has acted more like a police officer. With little things like when she talks to that the mutton chops, because I still can't remember his name, and just says, you know, goes, okay, just take me through from the beginning, trying to get all the facts out as if she is on patrol, you know, talking to a raving lunatic with mutton chops. But her relationship with the doctor is a very interesting one, making it very interesting viewing.
Yeah.
It's not a case of what it was before, I suppose, or I'm trying to think with a previous doctor where it was just a case of like Clara and the doctor as well. They weren't like equally the same person as such. It's just got an interesting dynamic because they're both performing really well and they do work well together, but there's now some like almost like a hostility thing. I'm intrigued to see where that goes.
Yeah, there's some great chemistry this year. The three of them work incredibly well. I say three of them, but Jacob Anderson as well. But I kind of see Jacob Anderson in the Nardole role, and that's not that I'm comparing his performance to Matt Lucas's or anything like that, or the characters. What I mean is Nardole was a character that would pop in for an episode or two, disappear for an episode or two, and then reappear. And I think that's kind of what we're getting with Vinda. And I'm enjoying that dynamic.
Because the thing that worried me the most was when they announced him and gave that quote, they like to be like River Song or something. I was worried he was going to be like Captain Jack or River Song, and he's neither.
He's a lot more measured.
He's very skilled at what he can do. You can tell he's probably ready for action. And from this episode, you got to see more of that. You got to see, you know, what his principles were. You got to see a lot of what made Vinda Vinda. I just really, really enjoyed his performance in this, you know. And it was also, on another note, quite cool to see Craig Parkinson. And he played it menacingly.
So good. And listeners should definitely check out his podcast.
Yes.
The Two Shot Pod. It's an amazing, insightful interview with an actor talking to other actors about their craft. It's a fantastic podcast. I highly recommend that. I've long thought he would make a good doctor.
He would definitely sort of stand out as one, being that he's about 6'6". You know, he's like tall, thin, and he talks, you know, he's a sort of a proper lad. You know, he was in Line of Duty, brilliantly playing one of the corrupt officers throughout three seasons, and he's corrupt throughout the whole three, working in the background, and finally gets called out in the third one. Spoiler alert. And I can't try to think of other things. I know he turned up in Misfits and things.
Yeah, he's a probation worker in Misfits.
He's the only one that didn't die, isn't he?
Sean Dooley is the longest serving probation officer. But yeah, he's good in Misfits.
I remember he was in the second series of Whitechapel as well. As stupidly as The Craze. It was the dumbest fucking season. They thought, well, the first series about Whitechapel was about Jack the Ripper and, you know, someone copying Jack the Ripper in present day. Right, okay. That's pretty cool, pretty intense. Quite clearly an ITV drama idea. And then they thought, second series, someone's copied The Craze. You know, what kind of madhouse is Whitechapel?
Yeah, I didn't watch the second series.
It's not good. Anyway, yeah. But no, Craig Parkinson was very good and very menacing.
He's in Cole Pilkington's sitcom as well, Sick of It, which is pretty good. I highly recommend it. If you're going to watch it thinking it's going to be like Idiot Abroad or something, it's very, very different. But yeah, basically he buys a sofa off Carl and then he says to Carl, oh, can you give me a hand getting it to my car? And then they walk for about 20 minutes and he takes it to another house and then resells it. So like he's picked up this sofa for free and then made Cole walk it round to the guy that's given him 20 quid.
This
is brilliant. It's brilliant. But yeah, going back to this episode, I liked seeing more of Vinda. I liked Belle. She had such a great voice. I can imagine her on Big Finish. Those kind of Irish tones coming through really well. There's speculation online that Vinda and Belle are the Doctor's parents.
That's crap.
And they're going to abandon their timeless child at the gates and Tatooine is going to find them.
No, I'd say crap.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
I've seen it's like people have said thingy's the master.
No, that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen either, because that's just it's just dumb. And the thing about it, like we said earlier, you can't make a joke on Doctor Who Twitter, because Doctor Who Twitter takes things so seriously. People going, I really hope it's not the master. That would be really, really, you know, they're really eating it up. Like I'll cry. I'm like, will you shut up?
Have a wank and calm down, Jesus.
Yeah. Liz, I went to bed last night. I was my phone went off. There was a friend of mine chatting about it, and Liz just went to me, bloody hell, you've got, you nerds, that's a whole paragraph. That's not a sentence, that's a paragraph on a WhatsApp chat. You should have seen my.
See, I married a Star Wars nerd. Well, I'm marrying a Star Wars nerd, so I get that. Should we talk viewing figures? I mean, viewing figures don't count for anything these days.
Go on, yeah, what was Sontaran?
Sontaran, the consolidated figures for that was 5.10 million.
What was the one? Sure, that's an increase, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, that's with like iPlayer views, people that Sky Plus'd it, etc. It's about an increase of about a million, I would say. So that's pretty good. Most of those, about 500,000, would be Doctor Who podcasters rewatching it to get every detail. But Once Upon a Time got an overnight of 3.76 million, which that's not bad. It was the fourth most watched thing Sunday on broadcast. Like people don't believe this, but people are not watching TV like they used to. And yes. I know somebody that has pre-ordered the Blu-ray for this series, and he will not watch a single episode until he's got that Blu-ray in his hands. So it'll be interesting to see how many Blu-rays sell. It'll be interesting to see what the overall consolidated figure is once all six episodes are on iPlayer.
Yeah, I'm just having a look there. So how much was it for, how many in the consolidated for Halloween Apocalypse?
I will have a look. I'm currently on DoctorWhoNews.net. Okay, Halloween Apocalypse on broadcast had 4.43 million viewers.
And that was its consolidated?
That was its overnight.
Oh, that was his overnight.
Let's have a look. Okay. War of the Sontarans got 3.96 million on broadcast. The Halloween Apocalypse got 5.79 million in consolidated and was the ninth most watched program that day. So, you know, it's still in the top 10. It's still doing well.
It's not doing too badly, is it?
Viewing figures really do not matter these days.
It's just showing that you can still have, you know, event television with Doctor Who. I just think this is the way of delivering it. Sam has said before, I'm excited to watch what happens, and I haven't had that. Because the episodes, like I think that we said before, like I said earlier, because they were like a cartoon,
yeah.
Once the episode ended, the next episode was a brand new one, which... It's strange, really, because I was thinking back to when Series 6 was on, so Matt Smith's second year, and there was a continuous story arc going through, and some of the episodes essentially just catered to that. There was, and it was a case of if you'd missed an episode, you wouldn't have caught up. And I found that frustrating at the time. It's very strange.
That was 10 years ago. TV was in a very different landscape back then. Mostly back then, people only had the iPlayer on their computer. And I know the BBC for years refused the iPlayer because they didn't believe people would watch TV on a computer. And people had to go for courses at the BBC, and it was called the sit back, lean forward method. And the whole ideology behind that was that people sit back to watch TV, but they lean forward to use a computer. So nobody was going to lean forward to watch TV. So they turned down the iPlayer about 60 times. It's not until really the advent of the smart TV when it's just an app on your TV and you can go on it. But then again, you get a generation of people that won't iPlayer things. My mom is a massive fan of the series Ghosts on BBC One. And an advert came up when we were visiting them in Devon about 2 months ago about the new series. It was like, all on iPlayer now. My mom was like, oh, so when's that on? And we're like, well, it doesn't matter when it's on. You can go on iPlayer and watch it. She will not watch anything on iPlayer. My dad will. He will consume everything on iPlayer. But if my mom doesn't record it or catch it live, she doesn't watch it. So there is an entire generation that they've just been conditioned over the years to watch live TV. And it's interesting to see this new generation that's coming up that will only do catch up, like my kids.
Some might even, as you rightly say, be saving it until the very end and watch it all.
Oh, yeah, so many people I know, like friends that I've said, oh, have you watched Doctor Who? And they're like, no, I'm waiting until it's all up. Because we live in a bingeable culture now. Mm. And I know Disney are kind of changing that with their Star Wars shows and they're going week by week. But if I'm honest, I prefer it all in one go.
It depends. It depends. Like, torturous fun to, because there's two ways of looking at it. You can either, as you right say, binge it all and go, right, I want to see, right, because when you get to an end, you do want to see the next episode. But once you've finished it, oh, that's it, that's done now. Like, I remember watching Stranger Things series 3 and I watched it over 2 to 3 days and I was like, ah, right, that's it now, that's gone. Yeah. What now? I've got to wait quite a long period of time now. But then you got the other one where, of course, you're watching it weekly and going, oh, come on. No, don't leave it like that. I need to know what happens next. It helps us sleep, I suppose. Because how many times have we all, you know, if we're watching something on Netflix and then it just comes up with autoplay the next episode.
You're like, one more.
I'll watch one more. And then, oh, I better get ready for work or go to school in some young people's cases. I quite enjoy the weekly thing with Doctor Who, though. Mm. I would not enjoy watching like the classic, like people grew up with the classic era. If they had to watch 6 episodes of 25 minutes each spread out over that period of time, I think I would be bored.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many classic episodes that I watch. I'm like, you could have done this in 2 parts. But yeah, they couldn't back in the day. The hook was the 6 episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, for a long time, probably about 25 years now, TV has followed the Buffy method. People give Sopranos like credit for changing TV and stuff, and it did, but Buffy was the precursor to that. And Buffy would have these standalone episodes with a slight thematic thread woven throughout, and it didn't really all pay off to like the last 3 episodes. So you could dip in at any point. Every TV show started doing that after that. Like early Doctor Who, Russell T. Davis, early Doctor Who is Buffy. It's going to be interesting to see what he does when he comes back. Would he stick with this serialized format that has gone down really well with fans, but the true test will be how it's gone down with the general public.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's intriguing enough people. The problem is, of course, you've had 2 years of a new Doctor that's sort of not really attracted new audiences as such. This series might win back the people that it might have put off, but I think it won't be till a new Doctor's announced that they might start to bring in a wider audience again.
Oh, a new Doctor will bring in a new audience, undoubtedly, because people are always curious. So it's like, who's the new one? Especially if the new Doctor debuts with the 60th anniversary and there's returning Doctors. You know, David Tennant's got about 15 kids at the moment. He needs the payday. He's coming back.
And Big Finish Audios have sort of finished a little bit. They're giving him a break. he's been basically Big Finish for lockdown.
That's not me again slagging off Big Finish. No, that's not me slagging off David Tennant. I've enjoyed every single audio that he's put out. Fans do feel a bit of 10 fatigue at the moment because all the Titan comics, whenever they've done a 13th Doctor comic, they've teamed her up with the 10th Doctor.
Well, there's that game that's come out, isn't it?
Yeah, we didn't talk about it. Yaz plays that game in this episode. She plays the Lonely Assassin.
Is it the Lonely Assassin?
I think it's the Lonely Assassin. There's 2 games. There's Lonely Assassin and Edge of Reality. And I think she plays Lonely Assassin.
What's the difference between the Edge of Reality and the Edge of Time one?
The Edge of Time, I believe, was a VR game for PS4.
Yeah, I've got that. I haven't quite made it past a Weeping Angel section. It's terrifying. Liz has said to me, put it on. I said, I can't do it. Because there's one section where you've got to pull the lever in front of you.
Yeah.
And you've got a corridor that splits left and right. So you obviously turn to face left. You can see an angel down there. Oh. Turn right, an angel there. And you've got to reach for this thing. So you're like quickly turning between the two. When they tease an angel at the beginning, before it gets to shows the angels really there, the moment I saw it, I was just there going, oh, fuck off. No.
You know, what's interesting is my kids gave up on Doctor Who during series 11. Like, they haven't watched it. And it's really weird because I wasn't enjoying the Capaldi era at all, apart from series 10.
Yeah.
They loved the entire Capaldi era. They would go to bed because often during Capaldi's run, it would come on at like 8:50 at night. So they were in bed by then because they were really little then. But the first thing they would do is on a Sunday morning, pick up my iPad and they would fire up the iPlayer and they were put in earphones and they would watch it. But to this day, the only Doctor Who villain that I've ever seen them react to in a like a scared manner is the Weeping Angels.
Well, even Liz pointed out they were quite frightening because William's crawling around the room. Well, I'm just watching it. Liz is on her phone. William is crawling around. On a tangent, actually, he loves the theme tune. The moment the titles come on, he sort of turns around from whatever he's doing, crawls towards the TV and stares.
He's been
sort of
conditioned.
Like, ooh.
Oh, we should talk about that. Segan brought back the middle eight.
Do you know, I didn't even notice it was missing.
Yeah, if you watch, because my fiance, she's not a massive Doctor Who fan, but she'll watch it. And she loves that da, 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 part of the theme. And that's been missing for years. I think they took it out around Capaldi's time. And she says it sounds like a superhero theme. Like, if you heard that bit isolated, it could be in a Marvel film. It could be in a DC film.
Yeah.
Meaning,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Superman's about to come. And she's a big fan of that middle eight, and it's back. But they play a really truncated version because, you know, you can't have end credits anymore. They got to scrunch them down and promote fucking Dancing on Ice with pandas or whatever.
Well, people are now suspecting because in this one, they advertised the River Song book.
That's interesting because they've not promoted any kind of tie-in material for such a long time. Back in the RTD days, they used to really push Big Finish. When it was on Radio 7, they would be like, tune in to Radio 7 to hear more from Doctor Who. But yeah, they've not done it for a few years.
No, they've either put out the DVD will be available in January or something like that. That's about it. But yeah, but there are people who are thinking that this one is tied in because River Song's going to appear, which I fucking hope she doesn't.
No, what I think that is because I saw Jonathan Carley, actually, our good friend, tweet that, why was that book mentioned? Is it because it's the most recent? And the most recent is a K-9 book. But what I think it was is, do we put River Song and Alex Kingston, who is a big, notable, recognizable character, even outside of Doctor Who, people know who Alex Kingston is. So I mean, that was the logic there. I think it was like 3 books ago was that book release. So I think it's just like, oh, we'll just promote this book.
I wasn't even aware how much of K-9 was still going until fairly recently, and I just thought, Jesus. But yeah, I was all saying about William. Yeah, William
sorry,
was, yeah, that's all right. No, William was crawling. So William was crawling around while we were watching the episode, and the Weeping Angel, when it goes after Claire in the first episode, I had to turn him away. Liz sort of said, I don't think he should be watching this at all.
He'd be scared of statues for life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they are creepy. I've been scared of gargoyles and sort of statues since, you know. Not because of the anime ones that are friendly, but the whole, when they say the eyes of Notre Dame are watching you.
Ooh.
And that stuck with me. But yeah, the Weeping Angels just turning up, and they were more frightening. I'm looking forward to this next episode.
Oh, me too. Yeah, it's entirely Weeping Angels, and we're going to find out about Claire, and I'm really, really interested to find out her story. Mm. I don't think we're going to see Vinda again until episode 6.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a break from him and that story. And yeah, I liked Belle. It's really difficult as an actor to just be by yourself. And for a lot of that, she would have been on green screen.
Yeah.
And like we know with the Star Wars prequels, like people like Malcolm McDowell struggled to put in a great performance on green screen. So I'm always really impressed when an actor pulls it off.
Malcolm McDowell?
Who was Terrence Stamp? Was he in?
Terrence Stamp.
Terrence Stamp.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he was in Phantom Menace.
That's it, yeah.
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 I don't know why I got confused then. I've been drinking.
I'm sorry, listeners.
This has been a rambling episode.
Oh, I didn't say it like I was just calling you out. I goes, what the fuck are you talking about, Martin?
I know.
I just reached for my inhaler. I was like, what the fuck? How dare you?
Oh, my fiance will probably be in there later going, you idiot.
You fucking blew it.
You know, Penny can recite the entire opening crawl to Return of the Jedi. Just off the top of her head, she can just do it. And I don't know why. And she didn't want to, because first of all, when she told me over WhatsApp when we were talking, she's like, I don't want to do it now because you'll think I'm reading it. And then the next time we met up, the first thing she said to me was that entire opening crawl.
That is actually quite incredible. I sort of remember... Like, I can easily quote Star Wars. I'll probably do a full run of Star Wars in my head. But one of the weirdest things is the alien dialects. So,
right.
So obviously it's subtitled, but I'll be like, Keskador Kasala. You know, I'm always doing the alien voice. And I'll just do it. And like Jabba the Hutt. Oh, yeah. It's just a
very, very bizarre how much Star Wars. The thing that annoys me about it is that I remember that crap and I can't remember a fucking thing I agreed to do yesterday.
Yeah.
That Doctor Who quotes, Simpson quotes. God, the amount, we're watching The Simpsons on Disney Plus and the amount of quotes that I know it before it's even happened on there. And I just say it. I just get infuriated at myself because I can't remember a lot of things. No wonder why I didn't do, you know, I did reasonably okay in exams, but imagine if I hadn't watched The Simpsons. There's so much pointless shit I know in my head that I just cannot recall most common things.
Something my parents always used to say to me is, oh, you're a mind of useless information. And my point was always, well, all information is useless until you need it. Like, why do you need to know what the capital of Belgium is until you need to know what the capital of Belgium is?
Yeah. I suppose, but things like, okay, how do I cook toast? Where do I live? What did I agree to do? What did my partner tell me to do today? You know, if you're doing a shopping list, what did she ask me to get?
I just take a picture of it now. We've got a whiteboard on the fridge and we just write stuff down. I just take a picture because that's the world we live in. All right, Chris, I think we've rambled on enough for one episode. So you've got a new episode of More Than Just an Impression coming up. So why don't you tell people what it is and where they can hear it?
So our first episode went down quite well with Jonathan Carley. The idea is to do a series of three on the series More Than Just an Impression, which I just interview other actors who, like myself, have been essentially just doing... It's always been a case of... one of the things someone always said to me, well, one person said to me, always said, it's what they want in a, like, if it's anyone playing Patrick Troughton or something, they want someone doing a performance, not an impression. And they seem to be, like, say the word impression like it's a condescending notion. I like to think I go more than just an impression with that. And there are many actors out there who do exactly the same thing, whereas we sort of, rather than a very quick off-the-cuff Rory Bremner sort of approach, we go for a full Michael Sheen sort of approach to it in how they perform. And I wanted to interview other actors who have done things more officially. Jonathan Carley playing the War Doctor in the War Doctor Begins sets. And also I've got another friend, John Coleshaw, the legend himself, who is playing the Brigadier. He's also played other roles, Chameleon. He's even played David Bowie for a drama before as well. Yeah, so it's a really insightful chat with him about how it began, you know, all these different roles and, you know, how they are essentially just more than just an impression. And that episode will be out on the 26th. A bit spread out, but that's just purely because it is a limited run series. We're not going to rush these interviews out. And also, we've got a third guest for this season. We're recording with them in December, and I'm really, really excited about that one.
I know who it is, and I'm very excited for this one. I won't reveal it yet. But yeah, it's a great podcast, and you're fantastic at interviewing. I think because you've done voice work, like you say, you've done more than just an impression with Patrick Troughton over the years. I think that you fully understand what it's like. You asked Jonathan questions that I wouldn't have even thought to ask him, and it was really insightful, and I can't wait to hear episode two.
What ones did I ask out of interest?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember, Chris. but you are about his process and stuff, and maybe you just phrased them differently than I would. And that's the difference. Like we said about Craig Parkinson's podcast, is he's really good because he's an actor and a working actor, and he gets it. He's in the actor's head straight away when he gets them on, so he comes out at a different angle than, say, I would. It's the same with you, and I can't wait to hear the one with John Coleshaw and episode three with that very special guest.
It's a very, very, very funny interview.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's a clip on online at the moment, but it's another hour chat with plenty of voices, because John is like a jukebox.
A jukebox of
his own control. It's like a self-aware jukebox. I don't ask him to do them. He just does them. They just come out. It's like he's got all the voices in there. He's almost a less sinister version of James McAvoy in Split. You know, he's not going to kidnap anyone, but he will entertain you with whatever voices are floating around in his head, which is brilliant.
Excellent. And I just wanted to promote an event that's happening near me. And I don't know if I want to give away my full location to people, but there's an event happening at the Epsom Playhouse on the 8th of December. number. Special guests will include Derek Martin, Colin Spall, and Katie Manning. And I'm probably going to go because it's about a 10 to 15 minute walk from my house. Yeah. And it would be very rude if I didn't. And I often complain that things are too much hassle for me these days and too far. And if I didn't go for this, I'd be a massive hypocrite. So yeah, I'm going to go along and support this. I think tickets are £15. I'll link below to Chris's podcast and I'll link below to this event.
Thank you.
Okay. And that's us.